You're listening to Agile Ideas, the podcast, hosted by Fatima Ibuchi.
For anyone listening out there not having a good day, please know there is help out there. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Agile Ideas. I'm Fatima, CEO at Agile Management Office, Mental Health Ambassador, and your host. This podcast is sponsored by Agile Management Office, providing high-impact delivery execution in an agile era for scaling businesses. In today's episode, I am talking to Jeff Wood. Jeff has 20 years' experience of leading transformational change within many industries in both public and private sectors. He loves making a difference to organizations and the people within, and prides himself on strong servant leadership, efficient and effective service design, delivery of complex portfolios, programs and projects, and development of people. With plenty of accreditations, including practitioner status in MSP, Managing Benefits Prince 2, and Leading Safe, to name a few. Jeff came across my attention after his organization that he works at, Severn Trent, which is a water company based in Coventry, England, and is also trading on the London Stock Exchange. It was founded in 1989, and organization as of 2020 generated over 1.84 billion in British pound in revenue. Jeff came across my attention from some discussions a couple of years ago around Severn Trent's desire to move to more agile ways of working, and particularly where Jeff is actually working in and around the delivery and PMO space. It was his responsibility to help transition Severn Trent from a waterfall governance model to a more agile, structured, and utilizing methods and different techniques, one of which was an agile framework, also known as SAFe. He was responsible for designing and implementing a greenfield project portfolio management office for Severn Trent. He restructured his PMO to a center of excellence model. He defined SRAs for project management standards, and he also helped to implement a number of different frameworks, methods, tools, etc. One of the more advanced organizations and people I've spoken to who have taken their traditional project management office and transitioned it to more agile ways of working. So in this podcast with Jeff, we talk all things about how to deliver PMO services to both agile trains and waterfall programs, how the PMO prioritizes their work, looking at different types of metrics, next steps for PMO, for example, better quantification of non-financial values, diversity and inclusion, and skills management. In this conversation, we cover some of the biggest resistance areas for their move to agile ways of working, but also some of the biggest shifts in his role over the last 2 to 3 years. We also talk about managing diverse teams and managing those teams remotely as well. So please join me in welcoming Jeff Wood. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Fatima.
Excellent. I'm really glad to finally connect. I know you and I previously were sort of doing some email exchanges a few years ago, yeah. I think it was, before your organization's transformation towards Agile. And now you've
got... Yeah, 2 years ago now.
Wow, time flies. I'm so keen to get into as many of the learnings and insights as we possibly can during that journey and learn more about what you guys have uncovered through that journey that may be beneficial for our listeners as well. So why don't you start by just telling me and the rest of our listeners a little bit about your role today and the organization that you actually work for.
Yeah, cool. I work for Severn Trent Water. So that's a utilities company. We provide clean drinking water and wastewater removal to a massive patch. It's 8,000 square miles in the UK. Wow. And that equates to 8 million people. So it's one of life's essentials, Fatima. So we do take what we do very seriously indeed. So I head up what's called the delivery practice within our technology and transformation functions at Severn Trent. And that's made up of a portfolio management office that's staffed with analysts, approximately 30 Scrum Masters, which
Wow.
reflects determined on the need and demand. Approximately 10 deployed support resources, and most recently, the product managers as well.
Mm-hmm.
A little twist for the PMO is that technology deliver change in an agile way, so mm-hmm. through a safe construct,
mm-hmm.
Whereas transformation, so the business readiness, is predominantly waterfall. They are dipping their toe in the water with agile. Okay. So as a PMO that spans both tech and transformation,
mm-hmm.
We try our hardest for our controls and governance to be agnostic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the challenge.
Oh, absolutely. It's a, you know, the story of most PMO lives at the moment, particularly yeah. where there is that, hate to say it, but hybrid, which I know is being overused as a term right now. But I'm interested to know when you decided to go down the path of agile, just at a high level, how did you determine which approach to take, and obviously landing on safe, but I mean, there's so many out there and approaches that you can take. How did you sort of decide what was right for Seven Trent?
Well, Seven Trent had always delivered change in a waterfall way. So when I arrived, there was a lot of projects ongoing, 80 plus. And many of them, there were some successes, but many of them were overrunning, mm-hmm. you know, to the familiar parameters of time, cost and quality. And we had a new CIO come in who had experience of agile, in particular SAFe, and the company where she'd come from had a lot of success in delivering that.
Mm-hmm.
So really that was the trigger. It was like, what we're doing isn't really working
mm-hmm.
very well for us.
Mm-hmm.
Our CIO had that experience. So we trialed it. We didn't flip everything
okay.
all at once. We trialed it on a particular program. So we turned that program into a train, and that went really well. So after 3 months, we was like, right, okay, we're going to flip everything. So okay. within 3 months, we went from delivering in a waterfall way to being agile.
Do you want to just explain to people that may be listening going, train? You turned it into a train. What's a train? I'm not talking about actual transport. Do you want to just give an overview?
No.
What is a train? You mean a release train?
Yes, a release train. So yes, it's a container of change where we group very similar. I want to try and avoid using the word projects because there's no projects in an agile world, but what would have been very similar projects. And a train at Seven Trent is typically around 8 to 10 teams.
Mm-hmm.
So it's teams of people delivering change.
Okay.
And we have trains that are aligned to parts of our business.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have a train that's delivering change for the water side of the business. We'll have a train for waste.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have another that's in internal to tech, another for group functions like HR and finance. So we have that alignment between train to which side of the business that relates to.
Mm-hmm. And that's also obviously linking to organizational strategic goals and objectives, I assume. Right. And also, the release train I envisage is basically like a value stream of work that is all heading in the right direction based on those particular areas, like you said, water and waste and technology and things like that as well. And you probably over time have found you've added more and sometimes made a decision to maybe merge some together. Have you had a view of that? Has it kind of grown over time?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It changes fairly regularly. We've recently done a change where We're delivering that much change to the retail side of the business that we've needed to stand up another train. So mm-hmm. another set of 5 to 10 teams in there. But yeah, it flexes on obviously the demands of the business. We're fairly static in the way that we plan our work for a 5-year period.
Mm-hmm.
So we know what we're going to deliver for the next 5 years.
Okay.
So it's not, so I guess it's fairly stable.
And you know, you mentioned that you trialed it, which I think is actually fantastic. You trialed it on a large program of work. You turned that into a release train, and then you realized it was hugely successful. I'm sure you had some KPIs, parameters for what success looks like. And then in 3 months, you said you flipped and you actually moved all of the work that you were doing into that sort of agile model, if you like. How did you decide, particularly with your background being across a number of different types of PMO roles? You mean you've been working in transformational change across the industry for 20 years. So you've obviously got a lot of deep-rooted knowledge on traditional methods and models as well. And now you've been asked to go down a path that's completely different. So where did you start being in the PMO space, wearing that hat? How did you know where to start and what parts to start shifting from your PMO perspective?
Yeah, it was a challenge. That's for sure. I reached out to people that were already doing it because that job has obviously been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, it felt completely new, but it hadn't. There's people that's been delivering change in agile way for a long time. And what became apparent that it's a different framework. Yeah, there's a different set of roles and there's different types of governance, and we have these things called ceremonies rather than meets or forums.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, there's a lot that's still the same.
Mm-hmm.
We still need to, we still need to manage risk. Change control is obviously very different, but mm-hmm. we're planning to a smaller increment now. We're only planning 3 months in advance, mm-hmm. so we call that a planning increment, so a quarter. So there's less opportunity or need for change. So a lot of the things were what are called the disciplines of a PMO were the same. It was more, how are we going to apply it now in a safe way? And that was the difficult thing. That's what we had to wrap our head around.
Mm-hmm.
And
is there a specific maybe example? I mean, one of the ones that I tend to use with clients, particularly when trying to help, people that are trying to take this path, and there is a bit of resistance, and we'll talk to that in a minute. But, one of the ways, for example, is rather than spending an enormous amount of time creating status reports, we move to showcasing models where we actually
stakeholders
together and visually show them progress. Is there any other examples you can share where, your PMO went from what could typically be looked as traditional to more of an agile flavor?
I think planning.
Mm-hmm.
So typically with planning, we'd have a dedicated planner who would help with the creation of very long and lengthy detailed program and project plans that would span years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But instead now we have a roadmap of delivery for the next 5 years, but we're instead creating a plan based on priorities of the business, which are the most valuable things for the next 3 months in detail. So we're only planning in detail for 3 months. So we still support that.
Yep.
And we've got a different set of tooling. So it's not Microsoft Project or Gantt charts, but instead we're doing it via Jira. Mm-hmm. So obviously we had to upskill ourselves in that. But we still provide support. We still assure. We still set out what good looks like and what data. Everything comes down to data with me, Fatima. So everything's data.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's data in a Gantt or data in Jira, there needs to be a minimum data standard for it to enable us to do that rolled up reporting and insights. So we still very much had a role to play.
Yeah, absolutely. We're
just slightly different.
So what do you think was, what do you think sort of when you obviously had a lot of challenges, what would you say is some of the resistance that you might have gotten or as a result of the challenges, or maybe some of the more specific challenges like that originally caught you out at the beginning that, maybe needed a bit more attention and time to get through?
I think the DMO being very much analytical in terms of skill set and background and wanting to know the detail of everything. We had to make a shift there, really. And we're very much used to detailing step-by-step work instructions and processes for how to manage and deliver programs of change. And we stumbled a few times because we went back to our comfort zone in trying to do that. And it took a while for us to lift ourselves up a bit and instead create frameworks for delivery from which we can operate within. So an example being, you know, it wouldn't be a step-by-step instruction on how to identify, record and manage risk, but instead lay out the bare minimum that we'd need from risk management, and is a suggestion of to how we go about it, but we wouldn't be prescriptive.
And how did you find when it came to sort of that shift in mindset, which is sometimes harder to come by for some people than others? What if anything did you guys consider doing? Did you do road shows? Did you start introducing drop-ins? Did you have showcases? Did you send everyone on safe training? Like, what were some of the things that you did to kind of help make that mindset shift?
Yeah, so we did the sheep dip to start with. So we did put everybody through training. But at the time, there wasn't any specific training for PMOs in SAFE.
No.
You know, it's changed now. There are some options for us. So we selected a couple of SAFE training courses, which gave us a really good idea of the framework. Which helped with give us a grounding. Also brought in a couple of agile coaches as well, and in particular a SAFE coach who had implemented SAFE previously. Yep, so that was very, very helpful. It enabled us to guide us a little bit. Sorry, what was the rest of the question, Fatima?
Yeah, just in terms of getting that mindset shift, getting them on training and bringing an agile coach, I assume that having the agile coach there maybe helped people with that mindset shift.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It is a different way of looking at things. But what I think is quite novel with our PMO is that we now operate in an agile way. And what I mean by that is we deliver our work via increments. So we plan our work for 3 months in advance, and that consists of BAU work, so your regular reporting and insight and assurance, but also the change that we're going to deliver as as part of a PMO.
Yeah.
That's delivered in an agile way. So the team, they meet every morning for a stand-up to say how they're getting on and what blockers they've got and what they're going to do that day. And then at the end of each 2 weeks, each sprint, they showcase their work to their customers and stakeholders. So they get that instant feedback. And at the end of the 3 months, because it being SAFE, we do an end of PI showcase. And that's to everybody. You know, this is what we've done as a PMO in the previous 3 months.
It's excellent. I think that's it's really good because you're not just supporting the agile delivery teams, but you're actually being part of it because you're actually leveraging whatever you're telling them to do or supporting them with, you're actually doing yourself.
Exactly. Yeah, we walk in the walk and talk in the talk. And that has really helped, the fact that we're doing it ourselves. We've had to be upskilled, you know, it's forced us.
Yes.
To practice what we preach.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, I don't know about your experience, but often I find a lot of organizations have PMOs that are kind of like a black box. You don't actually know what's inside until you have to change it or bring in someone new to set another one up. And I think having this sort of agile approach really does bring to mind the ability to work directly with your stakeholders, whether your stakeholders are, you know, the scrum masters or the delivery teams or technology or release train managers, et cetera. By actually bringing the two together, I think you're actually you're significantly better off, but also you're able to, I think, pivot a lot faster where maybe there's some changing requirements or circumstances in your business.
Oh, yeah.
So the speed you could do that must be significantly faster than what a traditional bureaucratic approach would have been.
Yeah, yeah. I've been doing this for 20 odd years, and I'm a big convert now. So the governance that we've set up for the PMO themselves, we have a steerco, which is made up of myself and then senior representatives from technology and transformation. And we meet monthly to determine the priorities of the PMO. What are the problems we're going to solve, or what are the opportunities are we going to exploit? Mm-hmm. So every month we get together and have that chat, and we've got a roadmap and we tinker with the roadmap. And then the team then take that and break that down into work for which they then deliver mm-hmm. in a sprint by sprint basis. And we're not reactive anymore. We're proactive. A bit cliched, but it's true. Yeah. It's like we learned of an audit action a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And normally we would be panicking, thinking, well, how are we going to do that, as well as all the other expectations that we set and all the work we're going to do. But it enabled that intelligent conversation at Steerco mm-hmm. to say, well, mm-hmm. this is a massive chunk of work we need to do here. Yeah. Where does this sit within the priorities?
Mm-hmm.
So we're having a prioritized conversation about the work of the PMO every month. Works fantastically well.
And how do you prioritize? There's obviously so much that you could do or need to do. There's probably problems, lots of opportunities. I want to know, like, what is some suggestions you have around prioritizing? And then on the sort of other side of that, what happens when maybe a big compliance piece comes up or something that really is going to knock the team out for a little while? Like, what sort of approaches have you taken for prioritizing the PMO work?
Yeah, so first things that, things like compliance or regulatory stuff you have to do, that will take priority, so that has to be done.
Mm-hmm.
You still have a conversation with your senior stakeholders to say, you know, this has come in, this is the deadline, it is a hard deadline. We had that one recently with the audit action where we was able to still negotiate an extension to it,
mm-hmm.
but it still needs to be priority number one. And then the other stuff, and there's a big old list of stuff. There's a massive backlog of change that we want to affect for the PMO and the trains and the programs that we support. That is, again, a joint conversation between technology, transformation, and myself, because there is some stuff that we want to do internally within the DMO as well, you know, like mm-hmm. sharpening the saw. We want mm-hmm. to, you know, we want a really good central SharePoint site for all our standards, and we want to be able to automate all our reporting, or as much as we can do, so we can be leaner.
Mm-hmm.
So there is stuff that we want to do as well, and we have a sensible conversation. So we base it on say value, not monetary value,
mm-hmm.
yeah, because it's not going to release any money by delivering some of the stuff that we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the quickest return and for the highest value that we can get? And we do that on a regular basis. So if it's going to be, you know, a huge amount of work to implement, I don't know, a new process or new procedure, but we think we're going to get very little out the back of it, it might still be a good idea, but it'll be right at the bottom of the backlog.
Yep, absolutely. And in terms of sort of the work that's sitting on the backlog, no doubt you'll be constantly reviewing that. But what about lessons? How do you record and apply lessons? Are you doing that as part of your stand-ups and your showcases, or are you running retrospectives of a different point in time? Like, how are you doing the lessons learned?
Yeah, is this for the... I was going to say, is this for the PMO or for the delivery? But it's both the same, really.
Yeah.
We capture lessons via our retros, which mm-hmm. we do religiously every fortnight. So mm-hmm. after the sprint review.
Yeah.
And from those lessons, we determine which of those are we going to do something about, i.e. what are we going to change as a result of learning that lesson? And we ensure the actions to do something about that lesson are form part of our plan for the next sprint.
Yeah.
So we do that in the PMO. And that can be anything to do, you know, in terms of how we work together, behaviors or performance, or whether there's something we need to change to our tooling, or whether we need to automate something, or some little tinkering to ensure that the insight that we produce is more meaningful. We'll take that forward into the next sprint. They're not massive or significant enough to derail our delivery.
No. No. Yeah,
but we'll ensure that actions are put in place each sprint to get better. And that's what the trains do. That's what the trains and the teams within those trains do in delivery.
And I think one of the biggest things would be that it drives accountability as well, because you're coming together, you're talking about it, you're agreeing what you're going to do about it. Next time you get together, it's going to be like, how have we progressed on the things we said we're going to do? Whereas in sort of in an older sort of traditional way of working, others outside of the PMO typically, or outside the delivery office in general, wouldn't really know what you're working on at any point in time. People often assume that, you know, the PMO has an abundance of resource, but often if they get down and understand the amount of work and activity that's going on, and you're actually able to present that now with your roadmap, and obviously in those prioritization conversations as well. So definitely will drive accountability. Have you seen an increase in that using this approach?
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. So obviously the senior stakeholders know exactly what the DMO are doing and are forming the roadmap for them. And that's been a little bit unique in itself, because in other organizations I've had to force that and almost come up with the plan myself and then try and convince everybody that it's a good plan. But I don't need to this time, because they're forming the plan with me.
Yeah.
So that's at a senior level. So that's a nice breath of fresh air. Mm-hmm. But also program managers and project managers, release trade engineers and scrum masters are invited to help shape the work. So at Steerco level, we are identifying opportunities or problems that we need to fix, but we're not coming up with the solution. We then have that refined with a working group, which is made up of that population I just said, and they're helping identify the definition of done for those things. So again, we're getting buy-in at that level as well. And then they'll come along to the sprint reviews and they'll give feedback there, or they'll sign stuff off. And suddenly you've got champions then for that piece of work, whatever it may be, that we've just landed.
Yes, amazing. It's actually really interesting, because the definition of done is something that is so absolutely critical. And I think sometimes it's misunderstood or assume that when you think you finish something, it's finished, but it's actually not about being finished. It's actually about what constitutes it being done at a point in time, because there's always an opportunity to improve it. But what that means and getting that directly from your stakeholders is absolutely critical. So it's really good that you apply that.
Yeah. The one lesson with that, and we still got some maturing to do in that definition of done, is that we fell into the trap of identifying everything we wanted to do, as you've just alluded to.
Mm-hmm.
And the team would be working on it PI after PI, months after months, and we still wouldn't be finished.
Yeah.
And it took a while for us to think, oh, we're slipping back here into, you know, our old ways of working, wanting everything.
Mm-hmm.
So what when we do definition of done now, we are constantly asking ourselves, well, you know, where's the value? Do we really need all these shiny bits as well?
Yep.
Or can we stop at this point and then move on? And I'm not saying those shiny bits we don't want another day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But again, we can pop it down the priority list and come at it in another 6 months, 9 months, whenever.
That's a really good point, and probably a good lesson for others listening, because it can be quite easy to just assume that you need to do a little bit more and add a bit more and spend, you know, you could spend weeks. I remember one organization creating, I think they were creating 25 month reports within a month, and they went to basically two audiences, but yet there was 25 variations, and it absolutely made no sense whatsoever. So there, it's kind of one of the avenues that you can start streamlining just by showcasing and bringing people together. And it's one simple thing that you can do. It's just crazy
to think that such small behaviors like that can really change and save a lot of time. What do you think is probably one of the biggest time saving opportunities that agile ways of working have created for you? Like, is there one specific example that you could share that really was something that's given you back a lot of time in your day? Or one of your favorites?
I hate to steal your example, but I'm going to. That's the reporting side of things.
Yeah.
So we don't need to produce so many status reports.
Yeah.
We don't need to produce any, really. And this is for the, you know, for the DMO and for the delivery trains. Because you say we've got the ceremonies in place.
Yes.
And they happen at the same time every fortnight, and they can, your stakeholders who were, or whoever want to see what's going on,
yes,
can rock up, rock up and experience it. We still produce at the end of a quarter a little bit of a display that can go on our, you know, like our internal social media, on our Yammer pages.
Yeah.
To and a little video as well. We put a little video together, a little fun video that shows the stuff that we've delivered, which is nice. But we don't have to invest so much time in collating information and making it look pretty and tailoring it for the audiences, because that's given us so much time back.
And creating five different templates and changing the formatting and font on one because, you know, executive manager number one wants this and executive manager number two likes purple, and you know, it's just such a waste of time and so unnecessary, but definitely a time-saving opportunity, so you're welcome to steal it. I think one of the things I tend to say to organizations, particularly when they are trying to make that transition, not just from a PMO perspective, from a project delivery perspective, and just even for people in the business, when they make that shift, one of the things that I sort of kind of call out often is it sort of becomes more of a, it's up to you as part of the system of change in your organization to pull for information. So go to the ceremonies, attend the showcases, like you said, with the video, go and watch the video that's been recorded because you might not be in that time zone at that point in time, but it's up to you to pull for information.
That's it, not push. Yeah,
exactly. It's not up to the PMO to push out information to you in a way that you like to see. It's up to you to come and grab what you need.
And there was a bit of resistance to start with for that, you know, because people, you know, particularly very busy execs would be used to that, wouldn't they? The reports landing on their desks or in their email. And there still was that expectation to start with. So there was that teething.
So how did you get around that? Because just to precursor that, the reason I ask that is a lot of PMOs, I'm sure you would agree, they don't necessarily have the authority and the autonomy that some PMOs do. The senior, the PMO and the higher up in the organization, I understand, have a lot more push and can actually get stuff like that, you know, implemented. But what was your experience in trying to get, you know, the executives to see a different way? Did you have the authority?
Yeah, well, not alone, but we have a place at the table. So setting up a steerco, I would strongly suggest, so where you've got your senior member of the PMO and you've got your head of delivery. For us, because we service two different areas of the business, it's two of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we agree where time is going to be spent on the DMO. So it's still an option. You know, we could, if they want to, because they're paying for it, if they want us to spend all of our time,
yes,
you know, producing reports,
yes,
that are tailored to the audience, if they want that, that's fine. They can have that. But obviously we won't be delivering the roadmap of change, which we know we know and they know we need. So it becomes a moot point.
Yep.
So you still present it as an option, but of course the execs will want to be able to realize benefits faster. We wouldn't want to be able to plan better, to make better commitments and deliver against those commitments. They're going to want all that stuff over 25 sets of reports.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting you say that because, you know, again, if I use a lot of PMOs today and some of them are still going down this path as I've experienced in my own past, you know, it sounds simple, but in the past, the executives still have the choice on whether they wanted you to spend all the time doing 25 reports or spend all the time doing something else. The problem was executives, for the most part, either don't have the visibility that they need or don't have the time. But what you've created and what organizations that go down this agile way of working is it brings the executives and the people in the projects and delivery space together. So you've got the same ceremonies, the same visualization, the same everything, which means you don't have to try to convince the executive to see it from your point of view, which is what PMOs spend a lot of time fighting for. Now they're forced to see it because they actually have to come to the same place to get that information. Yeah. Again, pulling for information.
Yeah, exactly. And you're staring at the same roadmap that you've all created, you've all been part of.
Yeah.
They're not being done to.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's actually a really easy meeting. Again, like with everything, there were some problems to start with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, some people that we selected just didn't have the time or commitment to it.
Yes.
And therefore, you know, if they didn't show up, or wasn't able to send a delegate with authority, mm-hmm. it slowly slipped back into being done to again, because we still crack on but in their absence.
Yeah,
but of course they would be, you know, they'd be upset then, because we wouldn't be delivering something that they deem priority. So you've got to really put the time and effort into selecting the right people, ensuring that they are committed and have that level of authority.
Yeah, absolutely. And going back to your earlier point around, you know, some organizations tend to say, you know, like you did with trialing it on a program, you know, maybe you trial it, you know, sometimes this spurs out of IT and then it grows and might spur out of a particular department or function in the organization. And then you create those champions that become the voice of the change across the enterprise. And so I think that's a really smart way of introducing that change as well. I just want to circle back just to, you know, earlier on you mentioned around, you know, you might have some things visually placed on a wall, you know, in a office corridor or in a meeting room, et cetera. What I wanted to touch on is just with the whole, you know, remote working, which I'm sure Severn Trent has had to pivot to at some point in the last couple of years, particularly with the situation around the pandemic and whatnot.
Yeah.
I'm interested to know, how did you go about that and sort of, What did you guys find helpful to support remote working during that time?
So collaboration has been really, really good actually with us working remotely, and we pretty much all of us have been doing that during the pandemic, and really started to reintroduce ourselves back into the office. Obviously the right tooling helps, so Microsoft Teams is what we use at Severn Trent, and you know, we'll pop on video and we're able to share our files across Teams.
Mm-hmm.
But we also store all of our roadmaps there, so mm-hmm. You can lock down the permissions to who can see those, but they're pretty much open to all. So it's making everybody aware of the existence of things like roadmaps and plans, and again, encouraging them to go seek out that information rather than being served to them.
Yes.
Also, we use Jira for a planning, as we said. So people are free to access that and see at any point live where teams are at.
Yep.
Or if they don't want to do that and you'd rather be told, it's rock up to one of the ceremonies, whether that's a daily stand-up to see where that team is at that point in time, or to come to a sprint review to see what they've done for the previous 2 weeks and what's coming up in the next.
And that's probably really good by having the tools in place, particularly if you had them in place. I know some organisations that I've worked with recently, some had tools in place and some had to unfortunately try to set them up while people were working remotely. So it was quite a bit messy to start off with. But I think you're right, because a lot of this sort of whole agile ways of working, there's a lot of tools that support the exact same activities and ceremonies and things like that. So if you've got them in place, but I think there's still definitely that collaboration in person when the opportunity provides for itself. I find showcases are really beneficial when they're in person. Oh, as absolutely. Well. So trying to get some balance for that has definitely been important. But I'm sure there's definitely a lot of things that you've probably experimented with in your business, especially because you guys have got so many people, and actually seeing what works and maybe what doesn't work over the last couple of, or at least last year and a half.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we tried pretty much all different types of mediums, such as WhatsApp for checking in daily with each other. Mm-hmm. We're using Microsoft Teams. We did have other collaborative tools as well. Mm-hmm. And we tended to be a bit overloaded to start with, and we started to lean down a little bit now on that. But yeah, I'll take your point about, seeing people face to face. I was holed up for so long for a couple of years because of our vulnerable daughter. I made sure I didn't really go out at all. I was a little bit worried when I went back into the office. But after going back, I can really sell the point of seeing people face to face and having those corridor conversations at a safe distance, of course, but those corridor conversations that you wouldn't necessarily have had because they're impromptu, they're unplanned, and there's a richness in that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? The other thing I see, doing some coaching, walking around and just overhearing conversations, obviously they're open to be heard. But, I've literally walked past someone who was saying something like, oh, hang on, actually, John, so-and-so happened over here. And then, you actually address a problem that probably would have been 15 emails if you hadn't caught it at the time. So that's another efficiency that.
And I learn so much as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I sat in the office and just making time of day with a chap who was sitting opposite me, and he turned out to be one of the cybersecurity graduates that we'd hired to put in place. I was integral to that, but I'd never met him face to face. So it's lovely to see him, but also he's able to teach me about cybersecurity at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, having access to those people and working in this, what I found working in the agile sort of ways of working and actually bringing people together that normally wouldn't work so closely together, you do get answers to things you need much quicker, and you don't have to wait until someone's read your steering committee report that you collate on the 30th of the month for the month prior, and then it's already 4 weeks behind in information.
Exactly.
Just one other thing I was kind of curious about. How do you manage rewards and recognition in an agile environment? I mean, what sort of things have you put in place that maybe be different to traditional rewards and recognition?
One thing that we have at Seven Trent, and it's not an agile thing, it's a more Seven Trentism, is we have something called Brilliant People, where an individual, performs well, but it could be anything. It could be something small that they've done or something big. It's recognised via a thank you that is shared across the organisation. Mm-hmm. So everybody gets to see what that thank you was for and who it was to. And then there's a reward that is associated with that. And it's vouchers that individual then can spend on whatever they choose. And I think that's a really nice touch. And it's something we've been talking about actually within our teams, is that, we want to say thank you more.
Yeah. Yep.
Doesn't take long, does it? Doesn't take long to say those words.
No, definitely.
And
not.
we can get so busy and miss that. So yeah, it's something that we want to start doing more of.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing is as well, some of the things I've seen like in organizations that are trying to go, okay, well, we need to reshape, because often, some agile teams, you're a team. So it's about the team, not about the individual necessarily. And so it can kind of get lost when some people go above and beyond their day job to actually, make something happen. So, one of the things that I've sort of said to organizations is make the rewards and recognition about not only that individual recognition, which is absolutely important, but also make, as an individual in that organization, the feedback you get from your peers and your stakeholders every single day through the showcase, through the conversations, through that's your measure of success as to whether you're on track or whether you need to improve in any particular areas. And I think line managers could really take take a look at that and get that feedback quite regularly rather than just waiting once a year to annual performance reviews?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So at the retrospectives, you know, they're looking at, well, at the reviews as well. It's lessons collated and feedback given on the team's output, not on the individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it has engendered more of a team ethos. And we celebrate as a team as well. You know, so at the end of a big deliverable, whether that's at the end of a PI,
mm-hmm.
When we've implemented something and it's it will always be a success because we deliver it to the definition of done that's been cited, then yeah. we'll celebrate that as a team.
And I'm sure the same happens where, you know, maybe something doesn't go to plan or, you know, something's being slipped. I'm sure it's not often, but it's the whole team takes accountability and, you know, you're working as a team. There's no I in team. So everybody is equally, you know, to be supported and celebrated. But at the same time, if things go wrong, I'm sure everyone's staying back or staying online late to get things sorted so that it gets done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we operate as a collective.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Awesome. Well, we're getting close to our end of our conversation today. I have a couple of rapid fire questions for you, if you are okay with those.
Yeah.
What is your favorite holiday destination?
Iceland.
Iceland. Have you been?
Absolutely love Iceland. I've been a few times to Iceland, to Reykjavik, and I can recommend the Blue Lagoon if anybody goes to Iceland, which is the outdoor thermal spa.
That is on my list. My husband and I would absolutely love to go there. So it's on the list. I've been to Denmark, but not to Iceland. But yeah, I think I need to go back towards that way and get
if it's not at the top of the list, get it to the top of the list.
Absolutely. So have you ever been to Australia?
No, not yet.
Oh, you've got to come
down.
Is that
an invite?
Yes, absolutely. Show you around. It's beautiful. There's so much to do. But this is
an
advertisement in Australia. But yeah, you definitely. What about your favorite food?
Balties. I do love curries.
Curries. Any particular?
Yes, one? And always go too hot.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, the Mal Bravado comes out and I pick a Madras or a Jalfrezi and then certainly regret it. But yes, I do enjoy it at the time.
And what was the last book you read?
Leaders Eat Last.
Leaders Eat Last.
Yeah.
And what was that about?
That's really good. That's it. Probably infer from the title that, you know, your team come first.
Beautiful.
I do love learning generally, but particularly about leadership and servant leadership. You know, being there for your team, not being directive and hierarchical,
but
instead serving your team, being of real use, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
Removing the blockers for them to deliver and enabling them to be the best that they can be.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It all sounds like you're doing an amazing job. And I think what Seven Trent has been doing and the work, and even from the first time we spoke to a couple of years, you know, on, it sounds like a lot of transformational shifts, a lot of growth, a lot of ongoing opportunities as well. So it's been really amazing to kind of hear more about the story. Jeff, this has been really wonderful. It's been an absolute pleasure. I really enjoyed learning more and the specifics. And I think this will help a lot of people, to be honest, because there's a lot of questions I've asked today that I'm sure others probably would have wanted answered as well. But before I let you go, is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners, a call to action, a piece of advice, or a question to ponder?
Maybe something to ponder, and that is how do your PMOs prioritize their work? And is that prioritization done with your senior executives and those that hold the purse strings? I'd have that as a little question, really.
Mm-hmm. I think it's probably something that every PMO should be doing if they're not already, but that could be the first step of many that takes them down that agile way of working that really can transform the way their PMOs work. Absolutely.
Yeah. Been an absolute pleasure, Fatima. Thank you ever so much for your time.
No, you're absolutely welcome. And I'll make sure I put your LinkedIn profile and your connecting for anyone who'd like to connect with you into the show notes.
Yeah.
And
more than happy to, and to share what we've done at Seven Trent with anybody that's interested.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Jeff. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Please share this with someone or rate it if you enjoyed it. Don't forget to follow us on social media, and to stay up to date with all things Agile Ideas, go to our website www.agilemanagementoffice.com. I hope you've been able to learn, feel, or be inspired today. Until next time, what's your Agile Idea?